Yashodanandana Vrajajanarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Randana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Om Vishnu Paya Paramahansa Parivrajita Acharya Stotra Sutra Shri Shemaris Devangri Saisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Karantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitaya Gopani Manande Hariri Bol Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 Chapter 14 Pregnancy of Ditti in the Evening Text number 40. Praninam, when the living entities, Hanyamananam, being killed, Dinanam, of the poor, Akrita Agasam, of the faultless, Strinam, of the women, Nigriyamananam, being tortured, Gopiteshu, being enraged, Mahatmasu, when the great souls. Praninam hanyamananam Dinanam akritagasam Strinam nigriyamananam Kopiteshu Mahatmasu Praninam Anyamananam Dinanam Akritagasam Strinam Nikrihyamananam Kopiteshu Mahatmasu Pradinam Anyamananam Dinanam Akritagasam Maranam Kopiteshu Mahatmasu Praninam Anyamananam Dinanam Akritadasam Dinam Nikriyamananam Kopiteshu Mahatmasu Praninam Anyamananam Dinanam Akritagasam Srinam Nikriyamananam Kopiteshu Mahatmasu. Translation: they will kill poor, faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Demoniac activities are predominant when innocent, faultless living entities are killed, women are tortured, and the great souls engaged in Krishna consciousness are enraged. In a demoniac society, innocent animals are killed to satisfy the tongue, and women are tortured by unnecessary sexual indulgence. Where there are women and meat, there must be liquor and sex indulgence. When these are prominent in society, kind of loud in our pujari room there. When these are prominent in society, by God's grace, one can expect a change in the social order by the Lord himself or by his bona fide representative. Om jnanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin miritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Kind of distracting me. Can somebody maybe ask the ladies in the pujari room not to talk so loud? Or somewhere it's coming from. I just got hearing aids, so now I hear everything. I was thinking ever since I got my hearing aids, my car seems to be a lot more rattles than it used to have. I wonder if there's a connection there. That's called a post hoc argument, right? Post hoc fallacy. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. Because something happens after something, you think that the first thing caused the second. But that's not true, and this is a good example. Actually, I'm going to read back a little few of these verses. Get the context here. Beginning with text 33. O son of the Bharata family, Ditya after this went near her husband. Her face lowered because of her faulty actions. She spoke as follows. The beautiful Diti said, "My dear Brahmana, kindly see that my embryo was not killed by Lord Shiva, the Lord of all living entities, because of the great offense I have committed against him. Let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously the very ferocious great demigod and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Let him be pleased with us, since he is my brother-in-law, the husband of my sister Sati. He is also the worshipable lord of all women. He is the personality of all opulences and can show mercy towards women who are excused even by the uncivilized hunters." Maitreya said, "The great sage Kasyapa thus addressed his wife, who was trembling because of fear that her husband was offended. She understood that he had been dissuaded from his daily duties of offering evening prayers, yet she desired the welfare of her children in the world. The learned Kasyapa said, "Because of your minds being polluted, because of defilement of the particular time, because of your negligence of my directions, and because of your being apathetic to the demigods, everything was inauspicious. O haughty one, you will have two contemptuous sons born of your condemned womb. Unlucky woman, they will cause constant lamentation to all the three worlds. They will kill poor, faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls." Kasyapa's not happy. He says here, "Kopiteshu Mahatmasu." The great souls will be enraged. So he's one of those, it seems to be at the moment. He's quite angry with his wife, quite upset, telling her what are going to be the consequences of what she did. Of course, he's also implicated himself. He went along with it, ultimately. So this actually, at the end of this, the last sentence in the purport, Prabhupada says, "When these are prominent in society, by God's grace, one can expect a change in the social order by the Lord himself or by his bona fide representative." As soon as I read that, I remembered this line I've remembered for a long time from one of Prabhupada's purports. The context is the Vamana Leela, and Bali Maharaj shows up there, of course, after Bali Maharaj is bound up. And Bali Maharaj comes there, and Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj comes there. Of course, he's Bali Maharaj's grandfather. So he makes some points. He speaks. He's talking about how when people become too materialistic, then basically bad things happen. So at the purport in that section, Prabhupada says, "Because of so-called scientific improvements in material opulence, people have entirely given up the path of self-realization. Practically no one is interested in God, one's relationship with God, or how one should act. Modern men have altogether forgotten such questions because they are mad for material possessions. If this kind of civilization continues, the time will soon come when the Supreme Personality of Godhead will take away all the material opulences. Then people will come to their senses." So sometimes Krishna has to do very drastic things. And his avatars, of course, his avatars are big events, all of the descents of the Lord, when the Lord comes to this world. Here we're hearing about inauspicious things, but when the Lord does his leelas, then many wonderful things occur, and they're so fascinating that the great souls record them, and people hear about them in the future, glorify them. We honor the appearance days of the different incarnations of the Lord. So just this list of things here, bad things that are going to happen. They will kill poor, faultless living entities. The word here, dinanam. So dina, we're familiar with this world. Krishna's dina bandhu. So it's often translated as poor. Actually, here it is. Dinanam, of the poor. So what does that mean, poor? It means they don't have any money. It actually means more than that, really. It's not just about, you know, not having a good bank account. Poor in that sense. They're poor in different ways. I was trying to think of another English word for it. And what I came up with was the idea of wretched, which is a word that Prabhupada also uses a lot, so wretched. And I looked up in the dictionary. These are actually in the, I looked in the Sanskrit dictionary also for what Munir Williams says about Dina. And he translates it as wretched, one of the syllables, one of the synonyms that he gives for Dina, wretched. And wretched in the English dictionary means very unfortunate in condition or circumstances, miserable, pitiable. So that means, really it's the opposite of being fortunate. To be Dina means you're unfortunate. You're lowly in some way, as it probably just says poor. You're a poor person. You're lacking in good things in life and so on. So if you're already in that situation, you're already wretched, and then someone comes along and tortures you and makes your life even more miserable, then that's, you know, how bad that is. In fact, the devotee is the other way, or Krishna is the other way. Krishna is Dina Vatsala. He's the friend of the fallen and wretched and forlorn and so on. Nityananda Prabhu, of course, is famous for being especially favorable to those who are most unfortunate. But here we see that these demons that are going to be created, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, no mercy. Just people are already suffering, just make them suffer more and more. Another, Akritagasam, faultless living entities. They will kill, actually says they'll kill the poor, faultless living entities. So in other words, innocent victims. Sometimes some people need killing. We have the power of the state sometimes, which is bona fide according to the Vedic Shastras, to take a life when people are especially heinous in their activities, deadly. Think about murder. When we hear about Jagai and Madhai in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we don't hear much actually about them, some mention of them, but not extensive description of their activities and how bad they were. But in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur really spells it out. In fact, he says they were murderers. They'd killed everyone. They'd killed women. They'd kill everyone. And somehow they're getting away with it, which is also, you know, you think, well, how could they? Wasn't there a government in place? How did these guys get away with this? So maybe it was just part of Nityananda's leela that he could come in and show how merciful he was. Dina hina yata chilo harinamu dharilo. Even if someone as fallen as them was delivered, they were actually murderers. So here we hear these Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they terrorize the whole universe. They're killing faultless living entities. And here it's also even mentioned tortured women. Or they will kill poor faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls. So I couldn't help but think as I was reading through the previous translations that she's concerned about women. And Lord Shiva being, you know, not taking it out on the women or something like that. And it says, he's the worshipable Lord of all women. So she's concerned about the women. He is the personality of all opulences and can show mercy towards women. So he's saying, you're so concerned about the women, well, your children are going to torture women. That's actually the word here, torture women. Strinam Nigriyamananam. So they terrorize the whole universe, Hiranyaksha, both of them, they were cosmic in their influence and what they were able to do. We know, of course, Hiranyaksha, he was so gigantic and mighty and powerful. He was walking around in the Garbhodaka ocean. It says there he's smiting the waves with his powerful mace, just begging for a fight. And you hear in the pastime, he went to Varuna, wanted to fight with him. Varuna said, I'm too old for this kind of stuff. But Lord Varaha, Lord Vishnu has appeared. You go fight with him. He'll give you a good fight. But his terror wasn't just localized, like we have local terrorists on this planet, but the whole universe was terrorized by Hiranyaksha and also Hiranyakashipu. Everyone in the universe, practically up to Lord Brahma, or maybe not the sages in the above Swargaloka, but at least up to that far, everyone was, in fear, trembling in fear, Hiranyakashipu. He was even taking over the things happened that usually happened by nature, like the production of nature and so on. He was controlling those kinds of things even. He had so much power. And even saints and sages were bowing down to Hiranyakashipu. So he's so powerful and causing so much harm. So I was reading this, I was thinking about this, and I thought, first of all, of course, this all traces back to, we're hearing about in the context of Lord Varaha. First, we heard about Lord Varaha's killing Hiranyaksha. So we're hearing about what is the background story of Lord Varaha and these demons. So we're hearing about all that. So we're hearing about Varaha avatar. The one thing we learned about Lord Varaha is that, now I was looking for the Sanskrit, I was looking to see if this was actually in the verses of the cursing in Jai and Vijay. I couldn't find it there. But the explanation is that the Lord wanted to fight. Lord Vishnu wanted to fight. He wants to experience all the rasas. He's rasa vayasa. In fact, it said the absolute truth is rasa itself. So he wants to experience everything, so he also wants to fight. So that's, Prabhupada brings that out in the purports and commentaries of other acharyas also. Although I didn't see it spelled out exactly. Maybe I just missed it, but I didn't see it spelled out there. In any case, this is the idea, certainly a legitimate understanding, the Lord wants to fight. And Jai and Vijay, they're happy to serve. I mean, that's who they are. They're servants of the Lord. Whatever you want, O Lord. Sometimes I was thinking of this, how we get different perspectives on things. So from a certain perspective, we think that it's something bad happened to Jai and Vijay. They were cursed and they had to come to this world and do this thing, which was maybe somewhat, you might say, distasteful. They had to play the role of demons. And also Jiva Goswami and I think also maybe it comes up in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, which I've been reading, Rupa Goswami. They point out that Jai and Vijay aren't cursed in every kalpa, every day of Brahma. So what seems to be, they're making the point there, they're almost painting it as a bad thing. They don't always get cursed. This happened, this was a one-up kind of thing. It just happened. It's not that every day they have to get cursed. So from that perspective, you think, well, it seems like it's being viewed as a bad thing that they got cursed and they had to play this role. But on the other side, they're great devotees. They're servants of the Lord. Whatever the Lord wants them to do, that's their ecstasy, actually. Actually, as a little kind of a side point, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath maybe too, I forget. I read these commentaries. One of them points out that actually the Jai and Vijay's expansions came to this world. And the argument that they give is that during the time, they took three births. So during that period, Lord Vishnu arrives with the demigods for some particular event, to fight with the demons or something, to help. And when he comes, he's accompanied by Jai and Vijay. So but taking that as evidence, they say, so it must have been expansions of Jaya and Vijaya who came as the demons to serve as the demons. So there's always these little footnotes, you know, come up, the acharyas have the insights into these things. Of course, it's completely textual. He's just reading, well, this is what it says here. So what can be an explanation? They came with Lord Vishnu, so well, this is another example of how, you know, the Lord's associates, they can do so many things simultaneously. Krishna's leelas are going on everywhere at the same time. So these devotees, eternal associates of the Lord, they accompany the Lord in different ways and all over the place, in different places and so on. So in any case, I was thinking of this idea that Krishna, Lord Vishnu, he wants to fight. And in order to fight, he has to have good opponents to fight with. And what's a good opponent? It means a real demoniac, horrible person. That's why he's going to fight. But as a consequence of that, this happens. You get demons who kill poor, faultless living entities and torture women. So you're saying, what do you say about that? You know? Lord Varaha, Lord Vishnu, is behind all of this just so he can have some fun. This has to happen. How do you think about that kind of thing, right? Actually, I'm struggling to give an answer. One thing I thought was, actually, I'll tell you what I did. I use AI sometimes. I ask it questions. So I asked, there's a couple of them. There's Grok and ChatGPT, and devotees are creating different ones for different things. So I actually asked it that question. And the only one that kind of made sense to me was it gave different answers. Sometimes this thing is quite amazing, actually. Sometimes it makes mistakes. It quotes wrong verses and, you know, strange things. But sometimes I think, where is it getting this stuff? Because sometimes it comes off as like a really intelligent devotee who really knows the philosophy. Because I say, what does Gaudiya Vaishnavism have to say about this or that? You know, what's the perspective on it? So the main idea of this was, the answer was that, well, this is Krishna's leela, and everyone is taking part in Krishna's leela when this happens. And obviously, they're getting some eternal spiritual benefit from this. That seems to be a plausible explanation. I don't know how much further you can go than that. There has to be. Krishna wouldn't just have everyone in the universe practically victimized and these horrible things happening to them. One thing also we could take from another perspective is that all of these things that seem so horrible in this material world, from a certain perspective, they're just nothing. They're just flashes, right? They're just a little flicker. It's just a flicker. And actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Jiva Dharma, he talks about the whole condition of the jiva in the material world. And, you know, it seems in many ways, you know, people want to criticize God or claim there can't be a God with all this suffering going on. And in one, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he takes one perspective, and he says, because of what the jiva can attain, direct service to God, to Krishna, you can enter into Krishna's leela, that potential is there in the jiva to accomplish that, then all of this is worth it, you might say. All of this suffering in the material world is insignificant compared to the grandeur, the excellence, and so on, of getting the association of Krishna. So one thing, of course, that implies is what a great goal that is. If all the price of all the suffering in the material world, that payment to get Krishna's association, that's how valuable that association is. Which is also maybe, you know, sobering for us, because sometimes we think, well, it's not so hard to go back to Godhead, to get Krishna. You just, this or that, you just, you know, just have to remember Krishna at the time of death. I'll just make sure I die with devotees around my bed. And, you know. Of course, that doesn't mean, even that doesn't mean you're going to necessarily remember. When the time comes, you may start freaking out, you know. In any case, there may be this idea, we just, you know, do the routine work and then that's all, no big deal. But getting Krishna is a big deal. Especially getting Krishna, right? There's so many avatars of the Lord. I always have these questions, and I think, should I mention this? You know? I was thinking how, you know, we hear about the avatars, and it seems like most devotees, and maybe this is, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but we tend to think that our swarup, whether it's inherent or not, even if we have to earn it somehow, our relationship with Krishna, we're either going to be gopis or cowherd boys or maybe cows or something in Goloka Vrindavan, obviously. But if we follow the official ISKCON line that we came from, we left the spiritual world. So everybody left Krishna, but didn't anybody leave Varaha? Didn't anybody leave Matsya? Didn't anybody leave Kurma? And if Lord Chaitanya came to give Krishna prema, that means everyone here is all Krishna devotees? We're only Krishna devotees rejected Krishna, but Matsya's devotees didn't? These kind of things go on in my brain. So I don't know how to satisfy these kinds of ideas. But anyway, my point is, we're really after something really, really high. We want to get Krishna. We want to, right, as I mentioned in my last class, we want to watch Radha and Krishna and the pleasure groves of Vrindavan enacting their pastimes. We want seva adhikar. We want that privilege. Seva adhikar diye koro nija dasi. Praying to Vrindadevi, make me your maidservant. And it's such a high thing. People don't even know about it. It's so high. It's very hard to find in the Vedic literature. Actually, that's one nice thing about when you read Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami, Laghu Bhagavatamrita, the Sandarbhas, they have these quotes from all over the place. It's amazing. There's a lot of Radha Krishna out there and the gopis in different literatures. Different tantras and agamas and this and that, and they know them all. There's this academic book I have, it's by some Indian scholar written years ago, and he's talking about Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas. He's giving summaries of them, and he has an appendix at the end of all the books that Jiva Goswami quoted. It's like 300 of them, something like that, shastras that he quoted. So these, we do get, generally speaking, of course, as I was saying, many people, they don't. Of course, the general idea is that Vishnu is the supreme and he incarnates as Krishna. But we know, of course, that Krishna, that's the idea, that Krishna's pastimes are so confidential. They're so high. And we're going all the way, we're trying to go all the way up there. Of course, this is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he came to give us this. So this is, I guess, to give us some perspective of, you know, what we're trying to do in our hardships, our hardships of sadhana bhakti, our austerities, and so on. We have to be patient. We have to be patient. It's going to take some time. Can't give up, even though it's difficult, because what we're trying to achieve, it's no simple thing. It's a very difficult goal. There was this famous letter with Prabhupada, you know, when there was some idea that would make ISKCON under one big umbrella corporation, like all the money would go to one office and then it would be funneled out here and there and so on. And Prabhupada immediately shot it down. And then they had a letter that he wrote. He said, Krishna consciousness must also always be seen for what a valuable goal it is, what a priceless treasure it is to get Krishna consciousness. And the devotee must understand that I have to work hard to get it, essentially, is the idea. He said, we just don't want to make it so devotees are just, probably use the term, a joint mess, where people just, they live together and they eat their meals together and they just, you know, it's a social thing. No, we have to serve Krishna with all our energy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I may have mentioned this before, he always kept his temples in debt. He did it on purpose because he didn't want them to sit around thinking, well, all the bills are paid, we don't need to do anything. He would ask them to collect for some project and they would give him all this money. Then he'd spend it on something else and he'd send them, now go out and collect it again. So the idea is that we should actually work hard for Krishna. That's the idea. Of course, Prabhupada would say that too. In fact, he himself would relish it You know, these examples of Prabhupada going, preaching all day long, fasting all day long, finally getting home late at night, getting to his place with the devotees after doing so many programs. This is life, working hard for Krishna all day, taking a little prasadam at night. So of course, Prabhupada was relishing. So anyway, that's, you know, with some context of there is suffering, certainly suffering in this material world. But overall, it's Krishna's arrangement. Right? That's another thing. We can't doubt Krishna's intelligence. He has perfect intelligence. And even if we always have to give Krishna the benefit of the doubt, right? Even if the doubt may enter because of what? Then you say, no, Krishna's all-loving. Rasa vaisa. Another way to interpret rasa is love. He's made of love. That's his constitution. He can only love. And so we have to see that somehow Krishna is expressing his love in ways we may not be able to understand, but we take it as axiomatic that Krishna is acting in a loving way. Even when we look at some, or at least I look at something like this and come up with wacky ideas, may cause doubt. We have to fall back on this. Krishna is acting out of love always. All right, I'll stop here. So this interesting verse again. They will kill poor, faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls. Now, this is another, you could see, you know, different perspectives. Here we see great souls. They don't take it, oh, it's just, you know, the material world. They actually are moved by it. They have compassion. Some of these things seem paradoxical. That the devotees, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. But here we see the great souls become enraged. Maybe they're not lamenting, they're just angry. Why? Because they see innocent persons being hurt. Which brings up the whole question of who's innocent, right? Everyone's just getting their karma. But that perspective is not necessarily there always in the devotee's vision. They say, no, this innocent person needs to be protected. Well, there's so many subtleties, actually, in our philosophy. I'm always telling myself, I don't understand anything when I get right down to it. Every time I think I know something, then I read something else and I say, oh, maybe I didn't quite have that exactly right. There's a lot there. All right. Actually, I kind of need to get home early today, but anyway, Bhajra Prabhu.
In this shloka, it's you can explain, because it's last is nama, prani nama, hanyamana nama, dina nam, krita, stri nama. Can you, something, it has something to do, any, because when we
are
see...
Are you talking about the grammatical ending of the Sanskrit?
Yeah.
I assume these are all plurals. Yeah. And the case also. We would call the objective case, maybe in English. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just the grammar of the verse. Now, of course, it's also poetic. You know, all these am, prinam, and manananam.
So it's plural.
Yeah, plural and the case ending, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Seventh case, Bhagavati says. They often speak about Sanskrit cases with numbers. First case, second case, third case, like that. You have to know what they are. Yes.
So you mentioned something about Kashyapa being implicated in this, but doesn't seem like he was condemned in any other verses or anything for his part in this. And could you explain something about that? Or you mentioned something that he was, but I don't know. Is there?
I'm sorry. Even with my hearing aids, I'm not hearing. It's too
much. Kashyapa,
okay.
Was he implicated in this offense?
Well, yeah, because he had sex with his wife at the wrong time.
There doesn't seem to be any evidence in
the
verses,
there's no evidence
no.
of it. Right. What happened to him? Well, he had to deal. Imagine having Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu as your children. You know, so. And also, they're always fighting with their first cousins. So he certainly, in fact, it's interesting, in the pastime where Aditi she wants, after the demons take over, the Daityas and Danavas take over the heavenly planets, then Diti wants to get the heavenly planets back for Indra and her other sons, the demigods. So it says, so she's waiting for her husband. So eventually Kasyapa shows up and it says he was away from home for a long time because he was meditating somewhere. So he's got, you know, 17 wives, but he, I need a break. I got to go into my man cave, right? So he takes off and goes and performs his, goes into meditation, comes back every once in a while. So the first Diti's got something to ask from him. Then Aditi has something to ask from him. Actually, Aditi, yes, Aditi. She, because she wanted to get the heavenly planets back for the Adityas. So Kasyapa, I don't think he had an easy time of it. So he suffered, even though it's not brought out here. I don't know, maybe in some other verses later. But he didn't have an easy life. Yeah. They're both his children, so he's stuck in the middle. That's why he goes and meditates instead. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Forgive me if I said anything inappropriate, but I think about these things. Hare Krishna.